In the fifth aliyah of Parshas Miketz, the brothers realize they have a terrible problem when Yosef orders them to bring Binyamin to him. And they say to each other, Aval Ashemim Anachnu. We are guilty. The word here, Aval, as Rav Soloveitchik explained, doesn't mean but it means indeed. We can no longer deny it. The same way we use that word on Yom Kippur, Aval Anachnu V'Avoseinu Chatanu. Indeed, we are sinners. And this is a moment of self-awareness and a moment of introspection and tshuva. And this is crucial as far as understanding the role of Mechiras Yosef in our history and in our own tshuva process. We have an idea, as the Meshech Chachma comments in his commentary to Vayikra and elsewhere, that whenever we talk about Averos, if we talk about Averos ben Adam l'makom, so Chet HaEgel is the paradigmatic Avera, and when we talk about Averos ben Adam l'chavero, the sale of Yosef is the paradigmatic Avera. And the reasoning is not necessarily that these are the worst Averos in each category, although in certain ways they are extremely severe, but that they serve as a model. And here in the case of the selling of Yosef, there is so much to learn in terms of the rationalizations and the justifications and the various ways in which people mistreat each other and the reasons why they mistreat each other and what they tell themselves about why they should do this and why they remain in those patterns. So here we find that the brothers had convinced themselves that they have to take action against Yosef, and now they're starting to realize just how terrible of a thing that they did. But what is it that they realize? So here in the pasuk, they reference Asherainu Tzoras Nafsho Bischanino Eleinu Velo Shamanu. So they refer to the fact that they heard him complaining, they heard him crying out, and they didn't listen. And the Ramban comments here that apparently it was the cruelty that was considered in their minds an even bigger avera than the selling itself. They considered the sale to be justified, but the fact that they were deaf to his crying out, that act of cruelty, that insensitivity, it was that they were regretting. And that is one aspect of tshuva. But Reuven responds to them in the next pasuk, Vayan Reuven Osam Lemor, Hello, Amarti, didn't I tell you? Didn't I say that what you were doing was wrong? And this isn't just so that he can say, I told you so. This is for a deeper purpose, to explain that it's not only the fact that you had an attitude of cruelty, but the whole sale itself was wrong. And this is a part of the process of the introspection and the tshuva that needs to happen here, that they need to understand how their rationalizations were mistaken, and their interpretation of what was happening had led them down a very harmful path. So here, Reuven is instructive as part of that process, but we find, as the aliyah continues, that Reuven's words are not so convincing when speaking to Yaakov, and we find a very strange interaction where both Yaakov and Yehuda try to convince Yaakov to trust in them to send Binyamin with them, and Reuven is not successful, and Yehuda is. And it's not so surprising that Reuven is not so successful, because the language he uses is as Shnei Vanai Tamis, Im Lo Avienu Eilecha. So it sounds like he's saying that Yaakov would have permission to kill his two sons, and it's not so surprising that Yaakov would not accept such an offer. And as Rashi quotes here, that his reaction is, B'chor Shota Huzeh, you seem to be a foolish firstborn. You want to kill my sons. Chibanavuim v'lo banai. They're your sons and not my sons. They're my grandchildren. Why would I be interested in that? So the Chasam Sofer discusses this in a tshuva. He has a tshuva that he wrote to the Maratz Chayes. It's the last tshuva in Chelek Aruch Chaim in Siman Reish Ches. And he understands that that's not what it really means, but rather what Reuven was saying was that he assumed that as the Bechor, his sons would split into two shvatim. He would have a double portion of inheritance in Eretz Yisrael, and he was offering to give that up if anything would happen to Binyamin. And apparently Yaakov had already decided that Reuven would indeed not have this chus, and it would go to another son. It would eventually go to Yosef. And his claim here of him being a Bechor Shota means that he was a incomplete Bechor, that he was not going to have this double portion that he was assuming that he would have. And when he says, they are not my sons, it's not as we would normally assume that it's a bitmiya kind of reference, what, they're not my sons? But actually, Chasam Sofer understands it to be a literal statement that yes, they are not my sons in the plural sense, meaning they indeed will not form two shvatim that will go to another son. So in any event, Reuven is not successful, and they wait a little longer, and indeed the famine is severe, and Yaakov tells them that they are going to have to go back, and now Yehuda takes up the task of trying to convince Yaakov to trust him, and Yehuda is more successful. And it is fascinating to note that the language that Yehuda uses, with which he is able to convince Yaakov, actually seems to serve as the basis for a very technical monetary halacha. Yehuda says, Anochi ervenu miadi tevakshenu. I will be responsible for him, and you shall ask for him from my hands. And the Gemara in the end of Bava Basra uses this apparently as the basis for the halacha of the arev, of the cosigner, the guarantor, which is a notion that we find in civil law as well, and therefore apparently has logic to it that can be understood in other areas and in other bodies of law, that when somebody wants to borrow money, so let's say we won't use names of the Shvatim so as not to be confusing. Let's say Chaim wants to borrow money from Beryl, but Beryl doesn't trust Chaim, but Beryl does trust Shmerel. So Shmerel says, you can collect from me, that if Chaim defaults, you can collect from me, I will be the cosigner. So therefore, if indeed Chaim doesn't pay, so Shmerel has to pay. So this idea that Shmerel can take the responsibility, that's the halacha of the cosigner, the halacha that's known as Arev. So the idea that Shmerel indeed becomes responsible to pay for money that Chaim borrowed, so why should that be true? If Shmerel himself didn't actually borrow any money, why should he be liable to pay? So the Gemara says, Minayin la'arev shenishtabed. How do we know that an arev actually has a halachically recognized debt? And the Gemara points to this pasuk, Anochi ervenu. The fact that Yehuda can take on such responsibility for Binyamin, that shows us that there is such a concept, a fascinating idea. And in order to understand this, we can reflect upon the fact that there are a number of views in Rishonim, as many as six different views in the Rishonim, to understand the mechanism of Arev. And if indeed there is a basis for the concept in these psukim, it may help us to understand exactly what it is that Yehuda was saying and why that was so impactful on Yaakov. So among the views, we have the view of Rashi in Kedushin to the Afav and Midbeis, that Rashi seems to be saying it's simply a gzeres hakasev, that it shouldn't have worked by itself, but because the pasuk tells us of such an idea, so that's why it works. It's a gzeres hakasev, at least that's how Rav Gustman in his Kuntresi Shirim Tikidushin understands what Rashi is saying. According to the Rambam, it's a kinyan dvarim. This is the Rambam's position in general, which other Rishonim didn't necessarily accept, that one has the ability to create a hischaivus simply by saying so. So because this individual, Shmerel, says, I'm willing to take on this debt, so then that becomes the halachic reality, and that's the way Arev works. The Ritva has a view, which has its origin in the language of the Gemara, that the hana, that the Arev receives from the fact that he's trusted, is something that is significant enough that creates the chov. Because he gets benefit, he gets pleasure, maybe an ego boost, from the fact that his word was enough to make the lender turn over the money. So that's something that is quantifiable, and we can base the obligation on that. The Rush and others say that what's happening here is that the halacha views it as if the Arev, as if Shmaru himself, actually received the loan, and therefore it is indeed his liability to pay it back if the situation is such that he's asked to do so because Chaim defaults. And the Rashbam is a fifth understanding that it's considered as if the Arev lent the money b'shlichus, not necessarily mamish b'shlichus, as the Kilos Yaakov explains, the Stipler explains, that we don't use the mechanism of shlichus in the literal sense, but it's like he's using his own money, and therefore it traces back to him. And the Nebuki Yosef explains that it's midin mazik, meaning that if the lender ends up losing out here because he trusted Shmerel and he lent on his say-so, and now Chaim defaults, so he ends up losing out, so he's able to be Tovei, he's able to make the claim against the Arev, because he lost due to his vouching for him, and that's what it is that obligates the Arev to pay. So if we consider aspects of these different explanations, perhaps we can understand how they are rooted in what it is that Yehuda is saying, and how that was able to have such an impact on Yaakov, that essentially Yehuda was, first of all, accomplishing something with the power of his words. That's the position of the Rambam. And what is it that he was accomplishing? He was completely identifying with Binyamin, as the Rush understood, that just like the halacha of Arvus means that the Arev is treated as if he himself received the loan, he's taking on the debt completely, so too Yehuda is willing to take on everything that happens to Binyamin. Some understand he takes on the Averos and all of the risks of Binyamin, so therefore all the dangers that come to Binyamin, but he's willing to completely identify with Binyamin in every sense of the word, and that itself presumably has an impact on Yaakov. And the idea of the Ritva, that the Hanah that comes to the Arev from the fact that he's trusted, is significant. So we find that here also, that the trust itself as something that solidifies the deal is present here also. The Parim Yafos, who was one of the Rebbeim of the Chassam Sofer, raises the question in the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, that Yehuda says to Yosef, Ve'echa Elel Avi, how can I go back to my father? And the boy is not with me. And the Panav Yafos asks the question, why does he have to mention that? He's already given the reason why he can't go back. And we could perhaps suggest that this is the issue, that the trust that the father had placed in him was itself what created the responsibility. So here we find that the halachos that define the concept of Arev are themselves rooted in what Yehuda said to his father, and they help us to understand just how it was that Yehuda was able to have such an impact on Yaakov and to get him to trust him. And it's a fascinating insight in just how halacha is itself rooted in the episode here, and the way that the emotions and the laws are tied together.